Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. So I have a couple of housekeeping things.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I'm not usually the one to do this.
No, you're not.
So we released a statement because we, and it was for our VIP Patreon folks. And the reason that we released a statement is because we had some technical difficulties. But if we're being honest, we've been having on and off technical difficulties for quite some time. And to be honest with you, it's been a journey since 2018 when we started this, thinking that we were going to do a whole podcast from our iPhones and some Beats or whatever it might have been. So anyway, what I wanted to say is we are fully aware that we have had some hiccups all along, you know, since 2019 with our programming and stuff like that. And, you know, we've released statements in the past, but we just want you to kind of remember that we are two people that had zero experience. I mean, not to say with computers, we know them to a degree, but with the equipment and microphones and cords and the programs that we use to record for the podcast. And what happens is, as two people that have full-time jobs and families and responsibilities and pets and things like that, is when something happens when we're about to record, sometimes we don't know until we're QAing it after, when we're listening for quality assurance, because that is why we do quality assurance. And we have to make choices about, are we going to release it as it is? Are we going to pull it all together?
Usually we're having conversations with Caitlin and asking her what her thoughts are.
Absolutely. And we think really hard about what we're putting out there. And, you know, sometimes we notice right in the middle of a recording that something's going wrong, and we make choices then too. And then when we make those choices, we have to sometimes go out to the store and buy new parts for our equipment after we figure out what it is that's going wrong. That takes several weeks, right? You know, it's an experience. It's a process. We appreciate sincerely the patience that you have with us, as we don't work in a big old corporate building doing this. It's from our own homes. And we just wanted to apologize and say that we're mindful, and that behind the scenes, we're not ignoring these things. We are trying to take care of them, figure them out, and figure out what we need to do to make it a better experience for you guys and for us. What brings us to saying this today is we have been having this ongoing issue that we have struggled to identify for a while now, and we really think that we did. We're confident that we did. It involved, you know, taking the time out to go to the store and use it and practice with it, all of the things. So anyway, going forward, I think we're good until something else breaks again, and then we'll let you know then. But we just wanted to let you know what it's like behind the scenes, and that we're not just saying, whatever, who cares what's going on, we're just going to record anyway. Super mindful, and thank you for your patience. So with that piece being said, I wanted to tell you about this odd struggle I came across with this case.
And when you texted me the name, I had the same struggle.
Yes. And after somewhere in the arena of 200 cases and more, plus Patreon and all of the bonuses, and half of which you've covered, so I've only heard about once in some cases, when I saw this case, I was like, I want to do it, but I'm pretty sure we've done it. And that has been something that I've basically thought to myself every time I've come across this name. And then I was like, but did we do it? I really don't think so. I looked into it. Melissa and I both checked all of our things and we're like, we haven't done it. We really haven't. And of course, I'm going to take that opportunity to make sure it's covered now, right?
Oh, for sure.
But I think the reason that Melissa and I decided that we weren't really sure is it sounds a lot like a couple of other cases that we've covered, unfortunately.
That, and I only know the name because of the tie to someone else, which I'm sure you'll discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's just dive in.
I will. So yeah, after that being mind blown, I'm going to jump in and tell you about Suzanne Lyle. Suzanne was born on April 6th of 1978. This Thursday, she'd be celebrating her 45th birthday. Suzanne was the youngest of Mary and Doug's children. Suzanne seemed quiet with a lot going on in her head. I say that because quiet people, I think, do have a lot going on. You know, they're artistic, they're, you know, writing novels of their own lives, things like that. And Suzanne is the perfect example of that, from what I gather. To me, she seemed artistic because there was several articles that stated that she spontaneously would have an idea and write a poem about it. So, yeah, that's artistic to me. But yet she was drawn to, like, technology and science. And this is a little bit before the time of computers. Or I should say it's coming to light at this point in time. After graduating from high school in Saratoga County, New York, she focused on computer science. So her parents, or her mother specifically, stated that very early on in childhood, her father had brought home a computer, and she was very interested and drawn to it. It was a very simple computer. You couldn't do much on it. It probably wasn't like an Apple where you can at least play some Oregon Trail or something like that, but she was captivated by it. And as the years went on, Suzanne was found to be taking apart this computer and putting it back together again. And so she had a special interest in this. And I find this so fascinating to have such an artistic-brained person also be this logic, science, technology-based person as well. I find for a lot of people, it's one or the other.
For sure.
So she goes off and she attends the State University of New York at, and excuse me if I'm saying this wrong, Winona, followed by a transfer to SUNY Albany. So she's pursuing computer science at both schools, but Suzanne had hoped the original program would challenge her more, but it really didn't, so she transferred, hoping that she would get the challenge at SUNY. But also, there was another convenience when she transferred, and she'd be closer to her boyfriend, Richard, who also shared her love of computer science. I'm not really sure. I don't think he attended the same school, but he was still in the area. They had dated for quite a while since high school. He was a few years older, so he had already been in college when she was a senior, to my understanding. But they persevered, and they made it work. Suzanne was always an amazing student. I mean, she graduated high school, she made honors, and she continued to do well in college. Some people go to college, and it's a tough transition, and their grades waver a little bit, but it doesn't seem like that happened to Suzanne. She really adjusted to the change, all the changes, really, really well. Aside from being an amazing student, she's also a really hard worker. She held down two jobs at the mall, and at a computer company. Not two jobs at the mall, excuse me. She held down two jobs, one being at a computer company. That's more probably what she wanted to do with her life, but also at the mall. She's trying to make ends meet. I think she's trying to not pay her own way completely, but pay part of her costs of being a student, right?
Yeah.
From what I understand, though, Suzanne was a hard worker, but that doesn't mean that she also partied hard. Suzanne remained diligent, responsible, and mature. She kept in consistent contact with loved ones. She didn't party, drink, or use drugs. On March 1st of 1998, Suzanne called her mother to wish her a happy birthday, and they chatted for a while. Suzanne felt bad about not coming home, but she was really focused on midterms. I think she had an average amount of stress that anyone that cared about their grades would have, and it's a pretty big deal, midterms. You want to make sure that you do well. It's an indicator of if you're going to do well for the rest of the semester, I think. She also kind of just caught her mom up on probably just some struggles financially. Her mom had offered her some money. Suzanne, I believe, declined. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. She just had a lot going on like a college student does and would. Suzanne's mom isn't the only one that noticed that she was stressed about midterms. People at work knew, but they're also quick to say that this wasn't like an obscene amount of stress. Like, she wasn't having some breakdown or anything like that. It was just probably run-of-the-mill discussion. Like, hey, Suzanne, how you doing? How are things going? Well, midterms are coming up. This really sucks, and I'm really concerned, and I have to make a certain grade to be in good standing.
Right.
If you can see that happening.
For sure.
So that was March 1st. Pretty normal. Nothing that stood out to anybody about anything. On March 2nd, Suzanne attended all of her classes, and she did go to work. So I assume maybe it was a 5 p.m. shift. The mall was where I believe that she was working at. And I only assume a 5 p.m. shift because classes ended at 4. And I know that she left work at 9, so it would seem reasonable for a 4-hour shift. I mean, that's just kind of standard after-school jobs is a 4-hour shift. So that's a guess, but at the end of the day, I guess it doesn't matter. She left her class, got prepared, went to work. At 9 o'clock p.m., she left, and this was pretty standard for her. She used public transportation. It seems highly likely, almost certainly, that she was dropped off at her dorm. The only reason I say highly likely and not certainly was because the driver did report seeing her with near certainty. However, he couldn't be completely sure that he dropped her off at her college campus. It's just not something you're maybe being mindful of, but he knew that she wasn't there like when he ended his route. Also, a friend reported seeing Suzanne at the bus stop around 9:45 p.m. This was the last sighting of Suzanne ever. Suzanne's boyfriend reported being in frequent contact, so like I think he probably expected to hear from her when she returned home from work. And he didn't, or so it seems. And this was, you know, he said it was highly unusual. So the very next day when he didn't hear from her in the morning, no time was wasted, and he actually contacted her parents and said he was concerned. Very quickly, they contacted campus police and reported what was going on. They hadn't seen her, hadn't heard from her, very unusual, but they didn't take it too seriously. They seemed to kind of think that this was a college student maybe goofing off, maybe stayed at someone's house or something like that. Even though there were protests from her parents and probably her boyfriend, like that wasn't her style, that wasn't what she did. They still didn't do anything. And even when she didn't show up to midterms and classes and stuff, they still weren't really worried about it. But that didn't mean Suzanne's parents weren't going to start looking on their own. They talked to roommates who didn't recall hearing her come in or seeing her at all. And, you know, as we know with her boyfriend, he still hadn't heard from her. It wasn't until maybe a few days later that campus security was like, okay, maybe this is a thing. And they recruited the help of the police to help them with the investigation, or rather probably at this point just handed the whole thing over, because this is probably out of the realm of the appropriateness of campus police investigation, right? Really, there was nothing that came out of the investigation. The best information that came out was that they immediately noticed that on the day of Suzanne's disappearance, there was a withdrawal for $20 twice at two separate times. One was at 4 p.m. and the other, I'm not specifically sure of the time. And while Suzanne's mother thinks it's super unusual that she took two withdrawals on the same day, it also isn't unusual for Suzanne to have taken out an increment of $20. That was like the standard amount that she took out every time. So part of it fits together. But there were two other withdrawals after her disappearance that leave people really scratching their heads. So there were $20 withdrawals from her ATM account, but they both incorrectly input the PIN number at the ATM machines that they used. First time successful. Now, there is not camera footage that was available at these ATMs to determine if it was her or somebody else. There was a connection that I think police tried to make that they saw in other camera footage, a particular man wearing a baseball cap, that they did find that they wondered if he could have been the one that used the ATM card, but they weren't able to verify for sure. And while, I mean, he couldn't maybe be 100% ruled out, it seems like he kind of was. After those transactions, the ATM card isn't seemingly used again. Those were the only leads that we had in the disappearance. Other than that, there have been no sightings, no other usage of her belongings. Her dorm room was left intact, like she was literally leaving for work. Her name badge, though, was found 2 months after her disappearance, and it's really unusable evidence. They can't tell how long it has been there, if that was the first and last place it was. And from what I understand, like, no forensic stuff on the badge to be able to tell them that anyway. And that is pretty much all that we have on Suzanne's disappearance. It's about 25 years post that March day, which we're almost a month after that anniversary. Do you have any initial thoughts? You just kind of look like your brow
want to know more about the ATMs. Do we have camera footage?
No. There was a camera at one of the ATMs, but it was aimed towards the register in the convenience store that it was used. And I think how they found the guy in the cap was because he probably approached the register to purchase something. And perhaps they wondered if he could have been the one. I suspect by the time the ATM was used, in conjunction to the time that he was at the register on camera, right? That's how I would do it. But they weren't able to make any link between the disappearance and this man.
Of course they weren't. Okay, but they entered the wrong PIN. Did they enter the same?
No, they did not enter the wrong PIN. They entered the correct PIN. First time.
Okay.
According to Suzanne's boyfriend, only him and her knew the PIN to her ATM card.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. What else do we have to work with? Someone saw her at the bus station.
It's more like a bus stop on campus, like pretty close to her dorm.
Okay. At what time?
She probably got off sometime between 9:30 and 9:45. The last sighting was about 9:45 by a friend.
Okay, so the 9:45 sighting by the friend, we have to believe is accurate because the friend would recognize her.
I'd say that's probably pretty accurate, yes.
Not that that helps at all, but...
And the bus driver did see her. I mean, sure, you could be wrong if it's not someone that you know, but he just couldn't remember 100%, like, if it was there that he let her off or somewhere else. But I think in conjunction with the friend's report, we can say she probably got off there.
And then what?
She wasn't seen again. I mean, I believe roommates and stuff didn't report her coming in or hearing her come in at any point during the evening. I assume that her boyfriend did expect to hear from her because if he just hadn't heard from her in the morning and only the morning, I don't think he would have reached out to her parents right then and there. He probably would have waited the day out, maybe. So I think he anticipated that they would talk that night. And then He also didn't hear from her in the morning and then was like, this isn't right, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, so we know pretty quickly that she's missing. And when was her ATM card used?
She used it seemingly twice on the day of her disappearance. But in the days after her disappearance, I'm not sure if it's exactly what days specifically, but it was used after her last sightings.
Okay. So what are the theories?
So the theories are, honestly, Leave Your Life really isn't in there.
Okay.
Okay. There's nothing about anything that I've read that she was unhappy or anyone suspects anything about taking her own life. It doesn't even come up really in any discussions. So there is her boyfriend. I just want to say he is not, I don't think he's a person of interest. He's definitely not a suspect. There's foul play. There is a convicted rapist who had violated parole and left the area right around the time of Suzanne's disappearance. That's a near quote from Wikipedia. But, I mean, they don't really have any link, just a circumstantial thing. A coworker had stated that Suzanne mentioned being stalked, but also that she didn't seem nervous or scared about it. I guess part of me wonders if she was using, you know, just really dramatic, not that she was being dramatic, but like maybe dramatic language about someone in her life. Like, oh my gosh, they're just in my business. It's like they're stalking me kind of thing. Maybe because there's no real other mention from other friends and stuff that she had reported that. That's a guess 100%. There is, now I'm sure you're thinking of this, Melissa, especially because we started the episode and you were like, it's linked to another person. There is some speculation that there is a single assailant, as this case looks a lot like the disappearance of Karen Louise Wilson. I'm not going to give the details about that just right
Wait,
now.
That's not the name I thought about.
Really?
Yeah. I only know this name because it comes up in this discussion of Israel Keyes.
Really?
Yeah, that's why I know this name.
Oh, I have not seen Israel Keyes in the articles I read, but there's quite a lot of articles, so I didn't look at every single one. But really quickly, let me just tell you a little bit about Karen Louise, but I'm not going to go into everything because I think maybe it could be something that we cover. But it is an abduction or a disappearance of a college-age girl. Similar area, similar-ish circumstances, and she has never been seen again either.
Okay, so that's going to be your episode in 2 weeks?
Perhaps so.
Okay, so I just threw it through Google real quick because I was like, wait a second, this is why I know the name, right? And yes.
Oh, fascinating.
Israel Keyes was active in New York at the same time.
Really?
So that's why I have heard this. A woman in a mall in Albany, New York, in 1998, reported a bad feeling and was followed by a creepy guy who she pointed as Israel Keyes. And that was at Crossgate Mall.
Wow, Melissa, how did I miss this one? I would have jumped all over that.
I know, I'm shocked. Now, there's never been a proven connection. I want to make that clear. Like, no one has ever said, yes, like, they're connected. But that's why I know the name.
I mean, I know his name comes up in disappearances of particularly women in areas that he was active. And it seems like a last resort, or it seems like we're just pulling it out of nowhere. But we're never going to know all of these victims. And he was very used.
No, we're not.
He was very used to doing this. He did it with ease, and he did it with a lot of planning. So I don't ever think that anytime his name comes up that it's completely far-fetched. And I believe it was years ago now. There's one victim that we have footage of. She was abducted from work, her coffee stand, right? Maybe it was
Alaska. In Alaska. Yep.
And he's very stealthy. He's very fast. And he's just got no qualms about what he's doing. So for her at 9:45 at night, probably, I mean, it's campus. It could be still pretty busy, but I mean, it wouldn't be far-fetched.
Right. And that's why, like, although it's never been ruled out, if he was active in the area, it's really hard for me to say anything else might have happened.
Hmm.
Because well, what, if he... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I guess, what do you think about the ET? Like, let's say that...
That throws me for a loop. But we know from the case with Samantha, which is what you're referring to, the coffee shop and all that, he did try to use her ATM card.
Hmm.
After.
Oh, jeez. I wonder, but he was, well, he was unsuccessful because you said tried.
Right. Or maybe I don't remember the case. Maybe he was able to get her PIN number from her before he killed her. I forget what, and some, I apologize for that, like, it's on top of my head. But I'm pretty sure that there was an ATM card, whatever, attempted transaction or transactions after the fact.
I think that does it for me. That makes it a real possibility.
But obviously we're never going to know because he chose to die by suicide in prison after he said that there's a lot more bodies we'll never know about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is super helpful. Thanks, dude.
I know. It's really tragic because any name would be some family's closure.
Right. So that's why I was like, oh, this is totally an Amy case because she for sure is going to dig into Israel Keyes.
I'm so sorry I didn't, but actually...
No, don't be sorry.
Thank you for doing that. Wow. I'm still mind blown. So there's also the boyfriend. Now, a little bit about him is, well, they've been dating for quite some time. I have read reports that maybe he was a little bit more into the relationship than she was. She was maybe considering breaking up with him or had tried, but he was very upset. And I think maybe she felt guilty or something and continued to stay in the relationship. It's also maybe a little bit of a head scratcher that he at first appeared pretty cooperative, but then he wasn't cooperative. He refused a lie detector test, but he also said, I'm not going to do any more talking without an attorney. So he didn't say, I'm not going to do any more talking. He did say, just not without my attorney present. And you and I both say that we would do the same exact things.
I was just going to say, I feel the same way. Like, if my husband goes missing tomorrow, I will provide the initial information, like, hey, this is where you need to be looking. Like, here's his cell phone data. Here's his. But, like, if they bring me down to the police station for an interview, heck no. My attorney will be with me.
Right. And this is after OJ. And I think we're starting to maybe talk about, like, oh, it's the husband or, oh, it's the boyfriend. People are probably starting to think about those things. So if he had parents or friends that advised him, like, hey, just make sure you're covered and you have a professional helping you, then please take full advantage.
Right.
So, I mean, there's that. But then you can also make an argument like he disclosed that him and Suzanne were the only people that knew her PIN number. Although I don't know why you'd say that if you're the only other person that's not missing that knows the PIN number and it was used after the disappearance.
But I think so if that was me, right, I would say only me and my husband know our PIN numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would, that's the truth. However, I would hope that when they go pull ATM footage, like, that would prompt them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would give that information so that way they could go look at, like, the ATM footage.
Right.
In a helpful way.
I'll just also add, he has an alibi. His friend reported that he was playing video games with him all night long. So there's also that.
Well, that's super helpful. So, okay. I think we have to, in my opinion, land on random foul play.
100% agree.
But does random mean Israel Keyes?
I think this is a possibility in this case more than a lot of other things where I've heard his name pop up. For example, there's a couple, I don't know if we've covered them or just talked about them. There was a couple in like New Hampshire or Vermont that they
were
unfortunately brutally murdered. And a link was made there, which isn't quite his MO if I remember correctly, but a lot of people threw his name in there.
Yeah.
So there's that. I guess I would say it's the biggest possibility that I've heard in a long time of an involvement with Israel Keyes.
And if you guys, like, we talk about Israel Keyes a lot because he's a prolific serial killer. If you want a bonus on Israel Keyes, I'm happy to build out a timeline and all the cases that are possibly connected.
If our listeners want it, then I'm in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't mean you. I know you know it, but so let us know.
Yeah. This girl is quiet. She's studious. It's not to say that you can't make enemies just because that is your personality, but she's in this consistent relationship with one person. There's no indication that there's unfaithfulness for either one of them, so no jealousy. I mean, I don't think that she has anyone in her life that is out to get her.
I agree with you. And but where does that leave us?
Well, if it was a college student or something, are they that great? Are they at covering their tracks that 25 years later she hasn't been found, no trace whatsoever?
I was just going to say, if it's a they're prolific if it's a college student.
And they don't even have a home to go to carry out anything sinister.
Yeah, but hold on. Like, we also need to talk about, like, Brian Koberger didn't take them to his house.
No, that's true.
And again, hold on. And I'll also say he's innocent until he's proven guilty, but let's be real.
Okay, fair enough. Just laying out some possibilities that might rule out many different types of people that don't have vehicles on campus, don't have resources, don't have a home. So if they're abducting someone and taking them somewhere, where are you going to go? Then there's murdering someone and there'd be a crime scene, you'd think.
Yes, I agree with you there. But then where does that leave us?
Well, I generally think it's random foul play. I am so sad to always come to the conclusion of, I don't think that she's alive, and I don't think she was alive for too much longer after she disappeared.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But I really, really, really on this one need to see more about the Israel Keyes stuff.
I would agree with that. I'm more convinced, like I said, about this case and that link than any other that I've heard recently.
All right, so do you want to open it up?
Yes, please. I'm sorry it took me so long to do this case, either of us.
I'm glad that we are. For sure. And guys, tell us what you think. Tell us your thoughts, your opinions. Tell us about Israel Keyes. We'd love to hear all of it.
All right.
And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
For more information,
information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.